Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today, the World Anti-Doping Agency is calling for Russia to be barred from competing in the Summer Olympic Games in Rio after releasing an investigation that shows a Russian government doping operation. The author of the report says it is beyond a shadow of a doubt that Russia was involved in an elaborate doping scheme that was effectively state-sanctioned cheating. But doping in sports, even at the highest of levels, is not new. Remember seven-time Tour de France winner Lance Armstrong.
And finally, the last thing I'll say for the people that don't believe in cycling, the cynics and the skeptics, I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry you can't dream big, and I'm sorry you don't believe in miracles. But this is one hell of a race. This is a great sporting event, and you should stand around and believe. You should believe in these athletes, and you should believe in these people. And I'm a fan of the Tour de France for as long as I live, and there are no secrets. This is a hard sporting event, and hard work wins it. So vive la Tour forever. Thank you.
Those were Armstrong's comments after he clinched the seventh trophy, the seventh time he won the Tour. But after years of rumors, Armstrong's cheating with doping was uncovered. He was exposed as a fraud and driven from the sport. But why? What is it about performance-enhancing drugs in sports that makes them absolutely bad? What lengths will some athletes, teams, nations, even the United States, will do to sneak past these anti-doping tests? Are we all hypocrites? Most of us use drugs every day to boost our performance. That cup of coffee, or we got shops in every corner that sell that stuff. So why not let athletes do it out in the open? We invite you into our conversation as we talk about doping in sports. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. We're joined by sports reporter and author Mark Johnson. His new book is Spitting in the Soup, Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. And Mark, welcome to the source.
Thanks for having me on today.
So the title of the book, Spitting in the Soup, what does that mean?
Well, that comes from a French term. In the pro cycling peloton, if a cyclist was going to basically come clean to the press and say this sport is dope to the gills, I want to come clean, his fellow colleagues in the peloton would say, well, why would you spit in the soup that feeds you? Because why would you want to ruin something that supports you, supports a whole ecosystem of coaches, managers, sponsors, and so keeping quiet about the constant presence of doping was really something that you did to carry on with your vocation as a cyclist.
How widespread, how big is doping in sports?
Well, I think that doping has always been part of professional sports. So, I mean, we tend to conceptualize today, we think of doping as something that's morally corrosive and that it has ruined the purity of sports. But that's kind of a false construct because sports have always turned to medical and chemical technology in order to enhance performance, really since pro sports started during the Industrial Revolution. So cyclists and marathon runners, for instance, after the 1908 Olympics, the IOC recommended that cycling and marathon be eliminated from the Olympic Games because they were inherently professional. And professionals had always turned to drugs to ply their craft. And it really wasn't until the 1960s that we started to make moral judgments about the ethics of using these chemicals in sports.
So the World Anti-Doping Agency, they say that there's three main reasons why doping in sports is bad, that it gives athletes an unfair advantage, it could be unhealthy, it jeopardizes the health of the athlete, and that it violates the spirit of sportsmanship, of sport. Those are the reasons why. And does that hold up?
Well, if you take, they really don't hold up to close historical scrutiny. For instance, the danger of doping in sports, there's really only one example that I could locate of an athlete in cycling having died as a result of doping, and that was Tom Simpson at the 1967 Tour de France, and he had a lot of amphetamines in his system, which accentuated his heat stroke. But under a doctor's supervision, doping is actually pretty safe. That's not to say it's right, but it is pretty safe. Particularly, you look at American football, you know, between 1931 and 2015, over 1,000 Americans have died playing American football. And those are usually from sudden cardiac death, heat stroke, or head injury. But the number of athletes that have died in America from doping is not even worth mentioning because you can't find any.
But your book is not limited to sports. You look at American life, particularly at kids who are trying to do well on an SAT and ACT and how they will turn to, ADHD drugs to get an edge.
Yeah, and that was something that really fascinated me as an American. I mean, I was born in San Diego and still live here. And the fact that we, as Americans, are the only nation other than New Zealand that allows the advertising of performance-enhancing drugs on television makes us rather unique to criticize sports people for taking the same drugs that we celebrate in everyday life. I mean, ADHD drugs, those have really been quickly adopted in by youth because they help rambunctious kids focus. And as schools were under pressure to deliver results, first under Bush's No Child Left Behind, and today with Obama's Race at the Top, getting one really rambunctious kid could really ruin the educational experience for an entire classroom. So there became this perverse incentive to get kids on amphetamines so that they wouldn't ruin it for everyone else. And so, you know, there's in 2015, there were about 58 million prescriptions written for ADHD drugs, and 64% of the adults who have those prescriptions don't have a diagnosis of ADHD. So we're using them to do better in school, in our jobs, so it's pretty normalized.
But those prescriptions tend to go to kids who are in higher income areas.
That's for sure, yeah, because we people very quickly figured out that if they could get the ADHD diagnosis, they would get more time on an SAT test, sometimes days to take an SAT test, so they gave them a real advantage over kids who couldn't get that diagnosis.
You quote someone in your book saying performance doping in the general population is more prevalent in America than anywhere else in the world. What does that mean?
I think that we tend to scold athletes as a way of not looking in the mirror. And I almost see it as if we lecture athletes, say, well, you shouldn't be using these performance-enhancing drugs. To me, that's tantamount to a mom or dad going out the door and saying, Junior, don't smoke cigarettes. I'll be back in 10 minutes when I come back with a carton of Marlboros. So it's more of do as we say, not what we do. And I think that Americans tend to take a more, in everyday life, pragmatic approach to doping. Our attitude is if it helps us in our life and it's not harming other people, then it's probably okay, which really is fascinating in the sort of the contradiction in our how we pass judgment on ourselves versus athletes.
We're talking about the book Spitting in the Soup, Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. The author is Mark Johnson. Our phone lines are open. If you want to call in, got a question or a comment, you think doping in sports is bad, should it be accepted? 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX.
In response to what its sponsors claim is an idea whose time has come, the first all-drug Olympics opened today in Bogota, Colombia. Athletes are allowed to take any substance whatsoever before, after, and even during the competition. So far, 115 world records have been shattered. We go now to correspondent Kevin Nealon, live in Bogota, for the weightlifting finals. Kevin.
Dennis, getting ready to lift now is Sergei Akhmudov of the Soviet Union. His trainer has told me that he's taken anabolic steroids, Novocaine, NyQuil, Darvon, and some sort of fish paralyzer. Also, I believe he's had several cocktails within the last hour or so. All of this, of course, is perfectly legal at the All-Drug Olympics. In fact, it's encouraged. Akhmudov is getting set now. He's going for a clean and jerk of over 1,500 pounds, which would triple the existing world record. That's an awful lot of weight, Dennis, and here he goes.
Disappointed to the big run.
Russian.
Performance-enhancing pharmaceuticals, they're banned from professional sports and the Olympics, but they remain part of the game. We're talking about the book Spitting in the Soup, Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. The author is Mark Johnson. We just heard a clip, a classic clip from Saturday Night Live, speculating what could happen if they just said, hey, all drugs, cool, let's go for it. And Mark Johnson, obviously, this is a comic bit, but why not just say, hey, let's just go for it?
You know, I don't think that's an ideal way to go. And it reminds me, I interviewed Travis Tygart, who was the head of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, and he was really instrumental in unraveling Lance Armstrong's anti-doping, or his claims that he was clean. And I asked him, I said, you know, as an American who's leading this organization, which we didn't even create our anti-doping agency until 2000. Doping was a federal offense in France in 1965, so we're really late to the game as Americans. And I said, how can you reconcile our massive public appetite for performance-enhancing drugs, whether it be stimulants for mental performance or Viagra for sexual performance, with us trying to create this island of purity in sports? And he felt like the fact that Americans are so crazy and so eager to find solutions to life's problems in chemicals creates all the more reason to try and create an island of purity in sport, because athletes are very influential and people mimic their behavior. So that's one reason. The other one is the 18-year-old kid who identifies his or her talent as a swimmer or a cyclist. They don't want to take drugs. It's expensive. It's complicated. And if you're using drugs without a doctor's supervision, it's potentially very dangerous. So I think that's another reason there is, you know, we really don't want to have to set the young athletes down a path where taking drugs is going to be something that's essential to the success of their career. It's an incredibly difficult effort, though, because doping is a collective enterprise. It's not just the act of individual deviant athletes. And that's really what's happening, what we're seeing in Russia right now, with WADA making this unprecedented demand that no Russians should be able to compete in Rio. It's really admitting that, yeah, doping is a collective enterprise that goes from the top down. State, corporations, they're all backing it.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Billy has called in. Billy, hi, you're on the air with Mark Johnson, author of the book Spitting in the Soup.
Yes, well, this has been 4 years since this has come out, since we found this out, we've understood it. Will we be able to keep up with the technology of cheating with doping in the future? Or are we just going to be 4 years behind every year?
Right. I think that it's a great question, because the problem is going to get even worse. It's going to be harder and harder to keep up with genetic modifications, because with the acceleration of genetic engineering, sooner or later we're going to get to a point where a state or a set of parents can genetically enhance an embryo so that a child is born with the cycling characteristics of a Lance Armstrong, or the swimming characteristics of a Michael Phelps, or the tennis playing characteristics of a Serena Williams. And that kid had no agency. They weren't responsible for the fact that they were doped. How does anti-doping handle this? So ethically and technologically, I mean, I think in 20 or 30 years, we may look back and cherish these simple days.
Well, even today, with the growth in regenerative medicine with stem cells, that's going to be very difficult to. Doping to use that to heal up busted up knees?
Well, as kind of the way to look at how do you identify what's doping and what's not is, in simple terms, if it's a restorative technology that's getting you back to a normative state, then it's considered not doping, but it's something that's making you better than well, then it would be considered doping. So the minute you come up with a technology that amends a pathology or helps you heal an injury, somebody's going to look at, well, how can I use the same technology to make myself better than well? And it's very difficult to stop that, particularly when you have most of the people on this planet, particularly in the first world, who aren't elite athletes, very eager to embrace and pay for these technologies. And then we're saying, well, yeah, you can use them. You can get your low T treated, but if you're an elite athlete, no, you can't. So the demand is there to keep pushing these technologies.
Right.
It's hard to keep that away from athletes.
So we're selling this testosterone supplements stuff all the time now. They're on it's on TV. But if I was playing in the Olympics, I couldn't take it.
No, you couldn't. Not without a therapeutic use exemption, which the anti-doping agencies are justifiably reluctant to hand those out because they're abused.
Now, here we are looking at with Russia today saying that they had a government-sponsored cheating organization, a scheme that they were but that's not brand new. You write about how big that's been, especially during the Cold War. But also in the United States, you write that the U.S. Olympic Committee established its own drug testing program in 1984, specifically to try to help American athletes avoid detection from the Olympic anti-doping organization.
The 1984 Olympics is so super fascinating when it comes to doping for two reasons. One, the 84 Olympics really unlocked the economic potential in the Olympics, which was something that the IOC was somewhat reluctant to address or take advantage of before, because the IOC still clung to this notion of amateurism, that the Olympics was going to be separate from issues of commerce and money-making. But in 1978, the citizens of Los Angeles passed a referendum making it illegal to use any taxpayer funds to pay for the Olympics. At the same time, we were getting clobbered by the East Germans and the Russians in the Olympics. So in 1976, for instance, the Russians and the East Germans took home more than 200 medals, and the United States barely cracked 91. So in the midst of the Cold War, this was a real alarming state of affairs. So in 1983, before the 84 Olympics, then-President Ronald Reagan had a lunch with the U.S. Olympic Committee executives, and he said, "Don't shortchange us. Don't embarrass us." Now, he isn't expressly saying dope, but he's, when you have the President of the United States tell you, "Don't embarrass us," that's a pretty strong message that you need to do what it takes when it comes to sports medicine to stay at par with the East Germans, who have a state-run, completely top-down managed sports medicine program that includes the administration of 2 million dosages of anabolic steroids every year. So what that means is that before the 84 Olympics, we, the U.S. Olympic Committee, used the anti-doping lab at UCLA to test our athletes to make sure that they were clean before the game started so they wouldn't embarrass us and we wouldn't shortchange the American people. And then after the games, a bunch of track and field athletes tested positive, but the spreadsheet connecting their names to their samples mysteriously disappeared, so that scandal went away, and everyone kept their medals.
So you make the comparison between doping in professional in sports and Olympics to also to the quiz show scandal, the Van Doren quiz. What is that comparison?
Well, in the Van Doren quiz show scandal was sort of a dawn of television, and people were riveted by this brilliant man who could answer all these questions on this quiz show, and it turns out that it was a fraud. And it led to congressional hearings about the abuse of the American trust, but then people complained, and our legislators complained, and quiz shows continued to boom, and we loved the spectacle. So I think while we may say we find doping abhorrent and distasteful, our actions suggest that we are more excited about sporting spectacle and entertainment spectacle. It's not justifying the doping going on, but particularly when you have an entertainment product, the doping can get overlooked in order to keep that entertainment product interesting and the money rolling through the doors.
The name of the book is Spitting in the Soup, Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. The author is Mark Johnson, and thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on, and enjoy the Olympics.
And this is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.